Algar Productions.
This is the Post-Atomic Horror, the most comprehensive Star Trek podcast ever produced. Your hosts are Ron Algar Watt and Maggie Robotham. Episode 499, A Moral Star.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Post-Atomic Horror. I'm Al.
I'm Maggie.
And we are, I think, at the midway point of the season.
Yeah. Already.
And haven't seen big climactic things happening.
We'll get into it, but this was like some big stuff. This is some real, like, all right, you guys have stuck around for a while. We're not going to answer any questions or anything, but we will point at them and go,
I feel pretty satisfied so far. Like, I feel like whatever mysteries are happening have been, if not addressed, at least like acknowledged, and like we're moving forward. Things are happening.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel, well, we'll get into this when we get to my good thing, but pacing wise, I'm very happy.
This is, I've been having such a good time with this show, and it's been nice after the wilderness of Lower Decks.
Yeah, and even like later Discovery like had some ups and downs, but this is pretty consistent so far. So.
Yeah.
So this is a big two-parter. So we will summarize together. Maggie, why don't you take part one?
All right, so the protopals are all still in recovery mode from last week's time shenanigans and side-eyeing Rock Talk to make sure that she hasn't gone insane from a millennium alone. She's probably fine. After Dal knocks over the pointy evil robot from last week, it activates a holo message from Gwyn's evil dad. Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. I'm going to murder everyone on the Rev-12 unless you bring me the protostar. You're my only hope to not murder everyone on the Rev-12. The crew realizes that they only have one charge left on the protodrive, so they can either head to the Federation and leave the miners to die, or return to the Rev-12, save the miners, and lose the protostar. And also, they probably won't save the miners. And also, they'll probably die. And also, Zero will be forced to torture people again. And also, their bodies will be forced to mine. It's a real needs of the many, needs of the Kobayashi Maru situation. After a pep talk from Gwyn, Dal decides to take the protostar back to the Rev-12 and not let a bunch of people and a cute cat person die. But they actually need a not half-assed plan this time. Like, so then we get a pretty great montage of everyone putting their whole ass into it. Unfortunately, no plan survives contact with your best friend's dad and his robot boyfriend. The Diviner makes a completely shocking betrayal, takes the protostar, forces Gwyn to come back with him, blows up the Rev-12's power source, stranding it in space without gravity and oxygen, and then also reprograms Hologram Janeway to be evil Hologram Janeway, which is basically goth Hologram Janeway, which, I mean, I don't hate. The protostar leaves the kids to die in the vacuum of space and heads off to do whatever. Evil Dad's about to reveal his whole plan to Gwyn when he discovers that, the protostar doesn't actually have its prototype proto-drive, which was sort of the proto-point. Yes, it turns out that the kids actually threw together a pretty good plan and start preparing to restore power and save the miners, which takes us into a part two.
Back on the asteroid, the miners suddenly find themselves able to understand one another for the first time. I originally had a Tower of Babel reference here before realizing that this is exactly the opposite of what happened in that story. Also, one of the miners is apparently named Yon Slut, so make of that what you will. Meanwhile, Jenkum and Rock Talk assess the damage caused by the Diviner's betrayal. But what's this? Killer robots? That's new. Wait, no, it isn't. These guys have been here all along. Rock is stuck holding the door while Jenkum determines what specifically needs to be whacked with which wrench before they both realize that switching places would make more sense. What with Rock having lived 1,000 lifetimes recently and spending a bunch of them learning math. The pointiest robot, you know, the Diviner's main henchman, comes down to finish off the gang, but the miners collectively bargain until they cut his fucking head off. Support your local union.
Woo.
Also, I just this second learned that the pointy robot's name was Dreadnought, and I have absolutely no use for this information now. Back on the protostar, Gwyn reveals that evil Hologram Janeway has just been regular Hologram Janeway this whole time and proceeds to take the ship back from her stupid dad. But then her stupid dad distracts her with some tedious backstory, and somehow this actually works on her. Said backstory has something to do with time travel and is accompanied by sinister mist every time he starts talking, like that duck robot from Cybernetic Ghost of Christmas Past from the Future episode of Aqua Teens. The upshot is this. At some point in the near future, Starfleet will make contact with their people. This causes the planet to have a civil war about it. And therefore, we must commit mass genocide against the Federation. Thankfully, this is all cut short by the gradual arrival of Dal and the gang. Zero is particularly pleased for an opportunity to confront the Diviner on how horrible it was to turn them into a weapon. Then they use themselves as a weapon, shedding the little portal robot body and driving evil dad evil mad. Don't look at the Ark, Marion, urges Dal. Gwen is Marion in this scenario. But unfortunately, she catches a glimpse of Zero's true form in the reflection of Dal's very shiny comm badge and goes very slightly evil mad. Still, though, the day is pretty much saved. The miners are free, what's left of the Diviner is dumped back on the mining asteroid, and Gwen is given the Kern treatment, which is to say, her inconvenient recent memories are erased like it's no big deal. So the crew proto-warps away, intent on returning the ship to the Federation after all. Epilogue! Real flesh non-hologram Vice Admiral Janeway, aboard an exceptionally phallic ship called the Dauntless, detects the protostar and orders an intercept course, which makes me very hopeful for where things are going next, until she reminds me that the protostar was under the command of Chakotay when it was lost, so we're probably going to have to spend more time with that guy.
Also, I have real trouble believing that Dal's comm badge stayed shiny enough to see a reflection in. That dude feels like Pigpen to me, you know?
I get it, but first of all, that's more Jankum. But also, Dal's taking it seriously this week, so he's like, no, I'm going to shine. It's like, yep. I just happened to rewatch Frank Grimes episode of The Simpsons where Homer decides, like, I'm going to be a model employee.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's Dal. He's, like, polishing his comm badge today. Tomorrow, he won't be like that.
I really enjoyed the fact that he is not incredibly annoying in this episode.
I called this out, not the most recent episode, the time loop one. He was annoying in that one. But the one before that, the con one with the Ferengi, he was getting a little better. And here, like, this is the first time where it's like, I buy that he's the leader instead of, like, at this point, he's only been leader by virtue of calling it.
Yeah.
Like basically saying shotgun
rules.
Yeah, exactly. And that's no way to run a starship unless you're in the Mirror Universe.
I mean, I love that, like, they're sort of figuring that shit out. We also have that moment where Rock Talk and Jenkin Pog are just like, actually, this isn't working and you're smart now. So let's swap this. Like, I love these kids figuring out, oh, wait, no, like, we can't be stuck in the roles we just decided to give ourselves.
But also, what I liked about that bit was not just that, but it wasn't Rock Talk trying to convince Jenkum, no, I'm smart. It was Jenkum realizing it and then being encouraging about it. Like,
yes,
it's one thing to say we're a team and we're all doing the jobs we're best suited to, but it's very different when they're all actively encouraging one another. That's so great. I love it. One of the things I loved about Force Awakens is something I noticed, like, the 10th time through, everyone's always sort of patting each other on the back and saying good job. It was just a nice little detail that, like, every sort of action movie is just you're either mean to the person or you're indifferent to them, but saying, no, we have a common goal and you did a good job with your part. Thank you. It's just, it's nice.
I always had this thought, like, about that movie where, like, it seems like the most obvious thing in the world for Han Solo to be a dick to this girl.
Mm-hmm.
And instead he's just like, hey, nice work. Yeah. Me and Chewie are going to keep you around for our space adventures later. I'm like, yeah, that rules, actually.
Yep. But even like when, not to get too far off topic, but like even when Finn meets Poe Dameron the first time and they're shooting down TIE fighters and he's like, you're doing a really good job, Finn.
It's
like,
yeah.
Aw.
It's nice.
Yeah, it's something, like I say, it's something you don't see in a lot of big action type things. And it's, you know, and it's nice here, too, particularly since this is for kids. It's like modeling good behavior kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Without ever having to, like, point at it and go, see?
Yeah. They don't come out at the end like He-Man and say, well, we learned a lesson today. Like, no.
I'd be fine with one episode of that. But I mean, I always like that kind of shit.
Yeah, but I like it. I like that ironically. I like that because it's a little dumb. But they earnestly say, no, our people are friends and they're being friendly to one another. It's nice. Like, yeah, you can give each other shit, but when you're in, you know, when you're in the thick of it, you have to be nice to each other. It's nice. And particularly Jenkum, who is a Tellarite, who are famously argumentative, he's still like, no, of course. You're better at this than I am. Go ahead.
I love the bit where they're having the discussion about how, like, so do we do this or do we go to the Federation? Like, this is a real big deal. And Jacob Pog's like, no, we're going to the Federation. What are you talking about? And then they talk for like a minute and he's like, no, we're absolutely going to go save these people, even though it's a deeply stupid thing to do. I'm like, God, what a great character. I love this guy.
Yeah, and I really thought the first time they did the sort of Bugs Bunny trick on him, I thought, oh, this is going to be every time. It's going to be, he's on the wrong side of it, but then they argue, and like, they did that here, but it didn't feel hacky or repetitive, you know?
Yeah, and it's, but it's also, it's not his entire personality. Like, that means when it pops up again, like, it's not just, oh, God, here we go again. It's like, oh, right, this thing. And also, if you don't like it, it's over very quickly.
The thing with Dal having to make that extremely hard choice you're talking about was like, they all look at him. They're like, well, you're the captain.
Yeah.
And it's like, and this is when he starts growing up. He's like, fuck, I don't know, man. What I wanted was to be able to point the ship someplace and say, let's go there. I didn't want to make a hard choice. And, it's, you know, like, this makes him the opposite of Jonathan Archer, and that endears him to me.
It's so, he does the whole like walk away thing, and they're like, Gwyn comes up and she's like, you're the captain, you called it, we're stuck with you, so you need to make the decision. And he's like, I'm not doing that. I just, if we're doing this, we can't fuck around with it.
Yeah.
And
well, this is all serious. I have been doing people is, might die.
Yeah. All I have been doing is fucking around.
Yep. Because I thought, hey, free ship, let's fuck around. Yeah. And look, I get that. If I was an adolescent and suddenly I had access to a spaceship, I'd probably fuck around too.
Yeah.
In fact, especially that was one of the... Well, go ahead.
Especially after being stuck on a shitty asteroid your entire life.
Yep. But this was, like, we called this out, I think, in the first episode. Is like, the fun idea of, like, children just like, hey, we get a ship, and...
Yeah.
If we don't know what we're doing, here's this helpful program in the form of a mom that will tell us how to use it. This is perfect. We love this.
Yep. And if she sasses us, we'll turn her off.
I did, like, it was so obvious that Janeway did not turn bad, but it was still very rewarding. Like, it's one of those things, you didn't have to surprise me, but it was still great to see.
Goth evil hologram Janeway is so fucking funny.
It's so, when they decide they're actually serious and they're going to act like Starfleet guys, they give themselves uniforms. And I looked this up. These uniforms are unique to this show. They wanted to make, like, these are the uniforms for the Protostar, which is fine. But then, when they say, turn off the protocols and answer to me now, like, suddenly her uniform turns from white to black.
Yep.
I'm sure she gets, like, darker eyeliner, too, but I...
She does. Tell. Her hair is black, too. Like, she dyes her hair digitally. Yes, yep. I'm evil now. Evil.
I've always wanted to play with this look, but didn't really suit me. But now I have an excuse to.
Damn, this rules, actually.
I'm going to tell real Janeway about this.
I'll take my coffee black like my soul.
Oh, very good. So we talked about this a little before we started. Like, this is my good thing. I read a show from the quote from the showrunners about how the show is structured. Like, because I was interested in, you know, I always like to know the behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah.
And what they had decided was they do 10 episode mini arcs, which is why this feels like a season finale. Like,
that's a great idea.
What this results in, I think, is it kind of solves the problem of bloated fucking serialized streaming shows where it's like, well, we've got 20 episodes, so we can't, like, this plot can't climax yet. And we can't.
Yeah. We just need to fuck around for like 3 episodes in the middle.
Yeah. Instead, they fucked around a little in so that we could get to know the characters and we could see the characters react to like Star Trek shit. But then we got down with it. And I would say all of the sort of primary plot stuff has been sorted. Like the Diviner's out of the way, at least for now, I assume. And like, you know, we don't know Dal's backstory. We don't know the truth about Gwen's backstory. So there's more stuff to explore. But we've kind of wrapped up like the miners are free. These guys are on their way to the Federation, which they said they were going to do. And like now it's on to the next thing. And it's like,
yeah,
I also wonder if they did this because the show like might be canceled at any moment. So it's like if we had to wrap it up here, well, you want to see what happens next, but we could wrap it up here and it would be somewhat satisfying. So,
well, yeah. It reminded me a lot when I was like, once you said that, I said it sort of clicked into place. But like, if this show is like, in theory at least, supposed to be running Saturday mornings on Nickelodeon. So like, it's a really good way to like, you know, that's what, 2 months, like a little over 2 months of if you're watching it like Saturday to Saturday, which is perfect for like kids watching this, you know.
Do kids, I have no idea. I would imagine kids growing up in the streaming era don't watch TV like that, but maybe, I don't know.
That's the thing. I don't know, but I do know Nickelodeon is still a channel that works like a, well, maybe it doesn't work like a TV channel. Like,
yeah, I don't know. Like, I know a lot of those. I'm so out of my element here.
Yeah. Like, I don't fucking know. It's Nickelodeon. Like, maybe they just repeat the same fucking four shows over and over again.
I mean, but when it began, I can tell you, I watched everything they did, and they did repeat the same short four shows over and over again, but that's because they only had four shows.
That is true. That was how YTV worked in Canada.
And this is that back then they had You Can't Do That on Television, which they imported from Canada, and they had Danger Mouse, which they imported from England. They didn't have a lot of their own shows, is my point.
Yeah. But it reminded me a lot of when I used to watch Sailor Moon, which was like... that was one of the early like serialized or not serialized, but like they had serialized plots that would sort of emerge every once in a while. Reminds me of that a lot. Yeah.
Like
you'd get the Monster of the Week episodes, but then like occasionally be like, yes.
What I'm saying is I'm surprised that anime hadn't always done that. I don't know. Like I feel like Japanese shows are usually more ahead of the curve on that kind of thing.
Oh, they probably did. But this was the first anime I had seen.
That was imported to the West.
Yes.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Like, I watched, like, a couple episodes of, like, Speed Racer or whatever, but, like, that was the one I watched, like, run home from school to watch.
I understand.
Mm-hmm.
What was your good thing?
So, the end of this episode, Zero unleashes the full power of her Medusan powers, and that shit ruled.
I thought it was a good visual representation of what we were promised in the original series, where it's like, here's a box. Trust us. What's in there is horrifying.
Yeah. I love just the little golf ball on legs goes into full on. Hey, asshole, you used me to torture people. I'm fucking done.
Yep. Remember me? I'm a weapon.
And then turns into a giant cloud of insanity.
Yep.
And that kicked ass. That was great.
It was very, very good. Mm-hmm. Although I feel like part of the resulting fallout could have been avoided by saying, everyone else shield your eyes.
Yeah, that would have helped.
Or implying that this was part of the big plan all along, so they knew to do that.
Yep. Well, I love the idea of Zero just like, by the way, if it comes up, I'd like to be able to reveal myself to the diviner so that he goes crazy. I feel like it's going to be real dramatic irony. All right, we'll write that down. That'll be subplan 4B.
No, and the thing is, they told us they had a plan, but then also watching them stumble and fail repeatedly, like I forgot for a minute that they had a plan.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, and then they were stranded with like no life support and the gravity was failing and the protostar was going away. I'm like, how the fuck are they going to get out of this? And then they're like, okay, we can stop faking it. Remember, we had a plan. I was like, shit, they did have a plan. That's right.
It was so good.
They do a good job of that sleight of hand of like, they give you the elements you need to figure it out, but then they distract you so much from it that you forget that, like, it's not predictable sometimes because you're so concerned with what's happening right now. You forget they already told you that, you know?
Yes.
Which is good. And so I don't know if the Zero thing was planned or not. It doesn't matter. It was still very rewarding.
It's
you're
fine.
Absolutely right.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't love that Gwyn. I didn't like Gwyn in this one because Gwyn turning against her dad was good. And then him saying, but wait, our backstory.
Yeah.
And like the fact that she paused Hologram Janeway to like watch it and completely bought into it and like, oh, genocide. We need to kill all of the Federate. Got it. Okay, good, Dad. Yeah, that's good. Like, She didn't say that, but still.
No.
It just, like, the fact that he held that over her and it worked, mm-hmm. and then the fact that she, like, she didn't do very much. Mostly she was just a liability, and it was disappointing, you know?
I did like she has the moment where she's like, you can't fix a genocide with a different genocide, Dad. That's not how mm-hmm. genocides work.
Of course you can. What are you talking about?
This will be a good genocide. Don't worry. This one works out great for us. Really?
Look, this is a genocide against bad people, so it's okay.
Oh, okay. Well, that always works out.
But, and I called this out in my summary, the whole thing is the Federation didn't, like, Starfleet didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
This Starfleet coming caused his own people to split in two groups and fight with each other. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not their fault. That's your fault.
Yeah.
It's
that's
not like,
okay, you guys weren't ready for first contact yet, clearly.
Yeah. Okay, maybe you could pin a little of that on Starfleet. Maybe they should study the culture first and say, if we do this, it's going to be bad, so we shouldn't. But it's not like, we've seen situations where first contact's made and they make a really dumb mistake and it really costs, like, oh, this is bad. We should not do this. And, like, that's not what happened here.
No.
Just, it seems
hey,
like
we're
Starfleet. Was just fine.
Oh, fuck you. No, don't fuck them. Fuck you.
Yep. Ugh. And so we fought with each other, and therefore we need to kill the Federation. Like, why?
Mm-hmm.
Idiot.
Well, clearly this is all the Federation. This is everybody's fault but mine.
Mm-hmm. But I do feel like this being a kids' show in like celebratory means Starfleet is just the good guys. You can't introduce a lot of nuance and complications in this version of it. You have to, like, these kids have to believe in Starfleet and it has to be mostly good. Like, we've enjoyed the moral ambiguity starting with, like, Deep Space, even a little bit of Next Gen, but definitely Deep Space Nine. And, like, sometimes it got stupid in, like, Discovery, but, you know, like, it's not bad to question that stuff, but this show is not the place for that. This show, they're just the good guys.
Yeah. Well, and I like, you know, it's, since these guys haven't seen any of Starfleet except for a ship and a hologram, like, all they have is the ideals to go off of, and I love that, you know?
Yep.
It's like the disco thing, the Starfleet is religion, you know?
Yeah, the idea that we've lost our way and we need to come back and fly the flag and remind people this is what we stand for. You're right. There's a weird similarity between the two things there.
Yeah, it's just like, no, this is ideals to stand up to. I love that.
Yeah. No, it's good. And we've been saying since Disco, since Star Trek came back. I mean, before that, since Enterprise, we need a hopeful Starfleet show, like a Star Trek show that shows, like, no, the point is the hopeful future, especially when things in the real world are going real bad.
Yeah.
Everyone always talks about, like, the 60s being this tumultuous time where there's Vietnam and protests and, like, racial, you know, unrest and so forth. And by racial unrest, I mean black people wanting to be treated like other people and being shot for it. I'm not trying to say, like, oh, both sides. No. Like,
no,
it sucked.
No, we're not.
It all sucked.
Yeah.
And, like, and the whole narrative of the success of Star Trek was, against that backdrop, we had this hopeful thing where the future people work together, and, like, boy, they've really lost their way with that. But
yeah,
this show kind of does that.
Yeah.
It's nice. What was your bet?
Sorry, I just got real depressed there for a second.
Well, yeah. Yeah, same. But the show had a bad thing, too. What was it?
So this episode reveals that Dal's rat tail, which I still hate, can also grip and grasp like a monkey's tail. That's the worst thing that's ever happened to me.
I must have been taking a note when that happened because I missed that, but ugh.
It's during the plan montage when they're doing like, they cut to like, Rock Talk doing a blowtorch thing, all that fun stuff, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But there's a part where someone hands Dal a screwdriver and he wraps it up with his rat tail. And I'm just like, oh, God, it does that? Ugh!
Like a possum.
Mm-hmm.
Ew, like his head is a possum.
Mm-hmm.
Good old
if his head was
head
a possum, he would fire his tail.
Gross. Yep. My bad thing, suddenly they decided that Zero, who, as you point out, had the most badass moment in the episode.
Yep.
Full of some badass moments. had the best one. Also should have a catchphrase, which is hoot hoot.
Now, I appreciate where you're coming from here, but also, hear me out, I really liked Hoot Hoot. It was weird when it happened the first time, and then the second time, like, oh, somebody has a catchphrase now. Good for them.
No, I don't want these. It just, it, you know, it's that same thing like with Murph, where it's like, this feels just a little too calculated to get the kids' attention, you know?
You can all have your own Murph at home.
The Murph at home.
I don't also want these.
A big part of their plan involved Murph, and I didn't quite catch, like, Murph was pretending to be Zero or something. I didn't quite follow that.
The idea was that Murph was, they realized that nothing they do can kill Murph.
Yes.
So they basically put the actual, like, the protostar of the protostar into Murph and then put Murph into a Zero shell.
Okay. I guess I missed that part.
Yeah.
Let's see what else.
They had to knock Zero's big arm off so you could tell the difference in, like, crowd shots.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Never thought I'd miss an arm so much.
Mm-hmm. Got all the best Arrested Development quotes this week.
Mm-hmm. I have a note here. Oh, God, Kate has all these kids drinking coffee now. Mm-hmm. Like, during the montage, she's drinking coffee, and then they're all drinking coffee to be cool like Mom, and it's like, oh,
yep,
God.
Yep.
Jenkum Pog does not need coffee.
Mm-hmm. Computer, slightly less caffeine for Jenkum Pog. Computer, slightly more caffeine for Jenkum Pog.
Jenkum Pog needs all the caffeine. Jenkum Pog's going to climb on the roof.
I love Jenkum Pog.
Yeah, I do too. Some minor tweaks I would make, like the first person thing, but other than or third person.
First question, Captain. First question, Hologram Janeway.
Mm-hmm.
Can Jenkum Pog get on the roof? No. Can Jenkum Pog go out in the street? No.
Oh, speaking of catchphrases, when they got everything together and they're like, okay, let's do it. Like the way all the Star Trek shows have been trying to do now, every captain's got to make it so, which we've talked about this. No, they don't.
Really don't.
They decided that Dal's would be go fast.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, warp engine is online, ready to go at your word, Captain. Go fast.
Ugh. Here's the thing. I am fine with that just because they don't have Hologram Janeway going. And also, everybody has a thing, except I didn't have a thing. But, like, you make up your thing. And he's like, oh, okay, my thing will be stupid.
It's less meta, I'll give it that. Mm-hmm. But it's still a terrible, like, I don't want to hear him say that ever again. Don't say go fast. Come on. The thing is, the reason I call out this kind of thing is because 95% of the dialogue and concepts in the show are actually not hacky.
Yeah.
It's just when they do something like that, it's like, oh, no, that hurts because you're actually clever for what you are.
Mm.
Like, here's an example of that. Tars Lamora is the name of the asteroid where they're rescuing the, you know, where they started out. And a moral star is an anagram of that.
Yeah. That's
cool. I love that kind of thing. Like, I thought this was a dumb title, but now it's like, no, I actually kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I will say this, though. Go fast is better than let's fly.
I think it's about the same.
Mm.
Only
I know which one I would say.
They're about the same to me, but I would excuse this one because it came from a child.
Yep.
Whereas Let's Fly came from an experienced officer, a career scientist.
Mm-hmm. Who, like, should know better.
She should absolutely know better. Who also has very smart friends.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe creativity's not your best thing, but you know some creative people, Michael.
Yep.
Come on.
God, Let's Fly just always felt like she was looking directly into the camera.
Yeah, it sure did.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what else.
Let's see here.
Oh, there were some jetpacks.
There were jetpacks that were shaped like Starfleet logos.
Yeah, I think they're hitting that a little hard, but I still like the presence of a jetpack.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's been surprisingly few, like, the things that I always want from science fiction, which are robots and jetpacks. There's been very little of both of those in Star Trek overall.
That's true.
And, like, way more swords than any of those.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's always good to see jetpacks and robots, you know?
Yeah. I mean, jetpacks are, well, jetpacks aren't established. We have rocket boots, but like this is fine.
Memory Alpha says that they're the same jetpacks that like Spock used to go into to V'ger.
Oh, okay. That actually makes like spacesuit jetpack. That actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see what else.
I'm going to go fly around in V'ger now.
Mm-hmm. Gonna go meld with a giant fuck off cloud.
Well, there he goes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I better go after him.
Mm-hmm.
Damn it, well, all right.
Ah!
Should I come with you or? Oh no, there goes Will Decker. Okay, whatever.
Good. What are we doing here exactly?
I'd have to shave off my big fucking beard to get in that space helmet. I'm not doing that.
I talked about this on Discord, but I want to bring. Since we're on the topic, I want to bring this up briefly.
What's up?
I read in my ongoing reading of a bunch of Star Trek crap. I read the old Day of Honor original series comic.
Oh, Day of Honor. I thought you said Dave Honor. I'm like, who's Dave Honor?
Yes, Dave Honor.
Sorry,
it's an original series. Well, it's set during the movies. Trek comic. By Chris Claremont and Adam Hughes, who does some gorgeous fucking caricature work for like the crew of that show.
Mm-hmm.
But Chris Claremont writes. If you don't know, Chris Claremont writes accents phonetically.
Mm-hmm. Like and, yeah, his run on X-Men basically made every character like an ethnic caricature.
Yes. I am Russian Colossus with power to turn into metal. Bozomoy, the white wolf. But he writes Bones like he's Rogue, which is basically like I gotta stop these guys from whatevering.
Mm-hmm, y'all.
It was very distracting.
Well, we talked about this because, like, I've read tons of Trek books, just like you, and usually the phonetic ones are Scotty, you know, they would
Scotty
spell
and Chekhov.
C-A-N-N-A-E. Yeah. I do that?
The wee bear.
Yeah, Chekhov.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then and Chekhov would always have the V and W thing and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, fine, whatever.
But, like, and Bones shows up and he's like,
I do declare, Jim.
I do declare a mint julep.
Mm-hmm. It's powerful hot out here. This flower's wilting. Now I'm just thinking of Bobby Hill in that episode.
Yep. Robert.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
He died in a fire.
He did die in a fire.
Mm-hmm. Let's see what else. Oh, I have resisted from minute one from this show the comparisons to Star Wars just because, like, yeah, okay, it looks a little Clone Warsy, so what?
Mm-hmm.
But there's a shot near the very end where we're picking up from the rubble and we're moving on to the next thing, and Gwyn's dressed in white, and it's a shot from behind of she and Dal looking out the window at space, and it's exactly the shot of Luke and Leia from the end of Empire Strikes Back.
Yep.
And it's like, come on, guys.
Guys, seriously, like... You need to move away from this kind of thing.
Yeah. Like, they don't do it a lot. Honestly, I would say some of the other live-action shows have done it way more. Like with the Death Star run that you liked in Picard and, like, you know, all the million Mos Eisleys we keep seeing and so forth. But that shot was so... Every nerd's going to know what that is. Come on.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the epilogue.
Yeah.
Like what was the ship? I wrote this down and then forgot it. The Dauntless, yes. Which Jesus looked just like a dick. Just like the head of that thing in particular was just like, this could not look more penile.
We're going to be penetrating deep into the Delta Quadrant.
Maybe the Gamma Quadrant if you're into it.
Why is everybody looking at me like that?
But that said, we got like Vice Admiral Janeway, which like she looked great. Like the character model was different enough. Like her hair was more the way it would look now if they cast this live action.
There's a little bit of gray in it too. She's clearly aged. Like she's whatever age she's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Whereas Hologram Janeway is like first season Janeway.
Yeah. She's modeled after classic Janeway. And this is like, yeah, exactly. new Janeway with corn syrup.
Hmm. New Janeway comes with a hat.
Mm-hmm. It's a different one. You got to buy it too.
Yep.
But no, I liked the look of her, and I liked like she's wearing a traditional. They're wearing the Starfleet uniforms from Lower Decks, which I like.
Yes.
It's one of the things I liked about the design of Lower Decks.
That's a good look. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. They're good. They're good uniforms. And like this is supposed to be a couple of years after Nemesis, or was it Nemesis?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what the last on-screen appearance of Admiral Janeway was.
That was Nemesis. She shows up. She has a cameo to tell Picard what to do.
I thought that was First Contact, actually. I don't know.
Is it?
Anyway, one of the next gen movies.
I thought Voyager was still in the air when First Contact came out.
Oh, you know what? You're right. You're absolutely right. I'm wrong. Yeah, it probably was Nemesis then. But regardless, one of the next gen movies. She like was an admiral, and at the time we were like, no, she isn't, and then we walked that back because it's like, no, actually, she's great.
Yeah, no. We were the assholes back then.
Yeah. But this is only supposed to be a couple years on after that, so that's the same basic idea of the character. Mm. And seeing the crew of the Dauntless, we got a Trill, which was great. It looked very classic Starfleet.
Yep.
And they're gonna go meet the Protostar now, and that's fucking fantastic. Like I'm excited.
I like so we get a shot of the crew, and there's an Andorian. There's also a Tellarite.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very excited to have him and Jenkum.
Presumably they'll meet
Jenkum.
Yeah, exactly. But like I thought maybe this show would mostly exist sort of in a vacuum where these guys learn about Starfleet in the abstract, but they don't really interact with them. But I think we're gonna get straight up like traditional Star Trek shit in this soon.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
I'm pretty stoked about that.
Yeah. And again, not looking forward to more Chuck, but
I don't know. Maybe it'll be good. You know?
It's possible.
Stranger things have happened.
The thing is, we watched 7 years of that show.
Uh-huh.
It took us 2 years, but we watched 7 years of that show, and I could not tell you anything about that character. Like,
no.
I know the actor didn't want to be there, and that's all the character really radiated was that feeling.
Yeah, that was the thing when I heard that they were bringing him back for this show. I'm like, yeah, but Robert Beltram didn't want to be on Voyager. Like,
yeah.
He made a real big point about it.
If it's a smallish role and he's just doing voice, like,
yeah,
it's not the commitment, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you're in four episodes and you just show up and do 2 days of voice recording. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not nearly as intense. You could do that if you have the setup in your home, you don't even have to go anywhere.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll see. I'd also, this is a part where I remind you that Robert Beltram was fully on about being a scab, so.
Oh, right. During the writer's strike. Yeah.
Yeah, don't forget that.
Yeah, everyone else was not doing cons as part of the, like, that was the solidarity thing.
Mm-hmm.
He just kept doing them.
Yep.
Dick.
Ugh.
But, like, when we get to Strange New Worlds, one of the things I think we're going to celebrate is here are some characters we know fuck all about. Like,
yep.
I have met Uhura, but I don't know shit about Uhura. Mm-hmm. And now we get to learn about her a bit.
Yeah.
That's great. And number one, and even Pike, like guys we know that are part of Star Trek lore from the beginning, but who never got characters. And maybe this show will do the same with Chakotay. Like,
yeah, it'll be nice.
Here's his actual character. It was buried under all this crap and a tattoo.
Yep.
What else?
What else?
We got the return of that kitty guy from Tars Lamora.
Yeah, it turns out that cat kicks ass.
Yep. Absolutely.
Fucking, it's just adorable kitty. And then in this episode, he takes his hat off or whatever. And he's got fucking, first of all, he looks kind of like Yoda in Attack of the Clones.
I could see that.
And then he fucking goes ham on the pointy robot and cuts his head off.
Yep. No, that was fucking fantastic.
Yep.
But
don't fuck with Acacian. They'll ruin your day.
Yep.
Made cats huge. Like,
it also looks more traditionally like a cat, I would say, than Mress or Dr. Ta'ana did.
Mm.
Like, it just looks like a cat walking upright versus trying to make it look more humanoid. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's 2D versus 3D animation, I guess.
Yeah, probably. But I like that. I like that they didn't anthropomorphize it more. They just leaned into the cat part of it. You know what I mean? So
let's see.
I'm trying to, as we talk, find the Cation child was not named.
Mm.
Ah, female, though. I was mentioning to Tilo, have we met a male Cation? I don't think we have.
I don't think so.
Nope.
You're putting a Cation in this show, and everyone's just like, well, this is a good excuse to put a cat girl in.
Yep, yep. But, you know, it's, cats are girls, dogs are boys. Okay.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, that's why Tiana worked out so well, was because the only other Cation was...
Mres.
Mres, or I guess the Cation erotic dancer from Trek 5.
Oh, God, when someone stepped on her tail and you got the stock... terrible. Just terrible. What else?
That was Dr. Tiana. That's how she lost her tail.
I'm surprised they didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Remember in Star Trek 5? Okay.
Also, I would buy in a second that Dr. Tiana used to be an erotic dancer on Nimbus 3.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. The Planet of Galactic Peace?
The very one.
Oh.
Yeah, I used to dance on Nimbus 3. It was fine.
I don't want to talk about it.
Fuck you.
Then Boimler starts going on about Kirk again, and she's like, yeah, I met that guy. He's an asshole.
Yeah, that guy sucked.
Stepped on my tail.
Ugh.
What tail? Exactly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. What else?
I haven't said shit in a while. Fuck.
We don't need to talk about Lower Decks anymore. It can't hurt us anymore.
No, we don't.
Yeah.
What else? Let's see here.
I thought, like, speaking of the Cation, I thought the assortment of aliens, like, I thought they put a decent amount of work into really, like, there's no humans at all.
No.
Which is great. Like,
well, yeah, I like that. It's supposed to be the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah. But we did get someone that looked a lot like a Morn to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there were some other recognizable ones.
There's a two-headed guy. I remember that.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. Never seen one of those in Trek before. I don't think. Maybe in the old series.
That I can remember.
Like the old animated series.
Yeah, probably. That feels right, because it's such a stock cartoon thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Which Filmation loved to just, we got this footage from He-Man or whatever.
Yep.
I mean, that guy's name was Too Bad, T-W-O, Too mm-hmm. Bad.
And his best friend, Manny Faces.
Manny Faces, because he's got Manny Faces.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. There weren't that many. There was like three.
Yep.
Guy, monster, robot.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really the whole spectrum, isn't it?
I mean, that's what kids like.
The three genders?
Yes.
All right. Anything else?
I know Manny Faces had at least three faces. Don't try to trick me, son. I think that might be it.
Very well. Well, that's all for this time then. Next time, we have Asylum and Let Sleeping Borg Lie, which is a terrible title.
Bad title, but...
That will be episode 500 for us,
yes.
Which is pretty cool. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Our 500th episode extravaganza, where...
We're not doing anything special for it. We're doing the next two episodes of Prodigy.
We'll do what we've done every... for the 100th, 200th, 300th, and 400th episode, which is show up and do the job.
Look, we pat ourselves on the back every now and then, but this is not particularly the time. We just happen to be in the middle of a run of episodes. But still, 500, that's a lot.
Yeah.
And... We had that year where we did shows that weren't Star Trek. We have...
Yeah, the Year of Hell.
I disagree with that. Year of Purgatory at the worst. Yeah. I did a little roundup of like everything we watched, and we liked more than we didn't.
Yeah, that's true. We liked way more than we didn't.
Yep. And then, of course, we've done 50-plus supplementals. Like, we've done at least 600 episodes, if not more. But proper numbered episodes, like, you know. It's good. I'm glad we didn't do the fucking comic book legacy numbering thing where when we came back, we went back to one.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
That would have just meant we'd be back at 500 next week anyway, so.
Yeah, probably. Well, no, because we're going to run out of Star Trek again.
Oh, God, yeah.
Although it does look like Academy's actually going to happen soon, so that's
good. That's good. I'm glad about that.
Yep. All right.
I would feel better if they'd announce one or two other shows, please.
I think all streaming is going the way of like, oh, we overcommitted and maybe we need to scale things back a bit.
I mean, honestly, thank God.
Yeah. Like for this show, I could use more content, but don't spread yourselves so thin, guys. Like make good shows. Don't make many shows. Just make
We'll have
shows.
Five shows on at once. That seems not sustainable.
Nope.
All of this is sustainable forever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Now we have to fire everyone and replace them with computers. Great.
Infinite growth in all directions.
Capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
All right. As ever, the website is postatomichorror.com. If you want to write to us, it is postatomichorror@gmail.com. And if you are giving to our Patreon, thank you. If not, it's not too late. You can get these episodes way ahead of time. It is patreon.com/Algar. We appreciate you either way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all for this time.
Yeah. See you, folks.
Hoot hoot.
The Postatomic Horror Podcast is a co-production of Maggie Robotham and Ron Algar Watt. Copyright 2025. Please don't sue us. We're just doing this for fun.